to work. Thank you for coming. Last session, lots of good choices. All my favorite speakers were hanging around the speaker lounge today. I said, well, you got another talk? They said, yes. They said, when are you doing? 2:45. I'm like, oh, shit. So the competition's good, and the fact that you got here is very, very nice. This is basically, so a long, long time ago, we had a meeting. I write for a magazine, Windows IT Pro magazine. It doesn't come out in paper anymore, but it's still around. Anybody here read a Windows IT Pro magazine? Oh, good, five of you. That's good. So this is like 17, 18 years ago. A bunch of us were at a conference, and our acquisitions editor at the time, Dina, I forget what her name, she's changed her last name 3 times since I've known her. But anyway, so Dina collects us all together at a breakfast meeting, which is great because there's no alcohol. Typically, when you bring all the editors and writers I know together, there's a lot of alcohol. And that's just because as writers, you know, we have to drink. Because as writers, it's our job to understand things, to understand the heart of the world, the nature of the world, and there's sadness there. And that's why there's alcohol. So, anyway, but at breakfast, we don't do that. We don't get started that early. And so she was looking for ideas, and I said, this is back a long time ago. Anybody remember the resource kit? Resource kit was awesome. There were these wonderful tools, but how many times did you look at the resource kit and say, you know what, I have no idea what the heck that, you know, the documentation sucked dead donkeys through a garden hose. It was just really bad. And I said, I don't know if that translates well into non-English, so I don't want you to get the wrong idea. You know, if I could speak other languages, you know, what is it in German? Gestinken? You know, whatever, something like that. So how close was I? I don't think so. Anyway, so where was I? Oh, yes. So I said, if somebody were to take a great resource kit tool, just write a little one-page article that says, ever had this problem? Wouldn't it be great if you had a tool to do this? Well, here's a resource kit tool, and this is what the syntax looks like. That's awful. Here's a worked-out example that actually works. And she said, when can you start doing it? And I said, I'm not doing that. That sounds like a lot of work, you know. So we went through breakfast, and actually nobody else had any ideas. And so she finally says, when are you going to start writing? I said, all right. She was pretty. And so for the last 17 years, I think, I've been writing a monthly piece in Windows IT Pro magazine called Windows Power. It's had several names, but it's currently called Windows Power Tools. And that gives me an opportunity because, honestly, what you should know about me is that I'm cheap. I figure Windows costs, this is a Microsoft conference, Windows costs a quite reasonable amount, but it's not a small amount. And so I don't have any money left over for other stuff. And there's a lot of great tools in Windows that we haven't paid any attention to, and a few free ones. So I've been actually doing this talk for a long time. I'll pick out a bunch, a dozen or so. So you kind of think of this as volume 4. And by the way, I'm not going to go over this, but please grab the slides off the ComNet, and the last 5 slides is just a listing of great tools I've talked about in the past. So you could either Google it, or you could Bing it, and trying to get asked back, you know. So you can Bing my name and the tool, and you'll probably find the article, or you can just find what other people have written about it. So that's sort of like the first 3 volumes compressed. Let's talk about that. So I'm going to talk about some Robocopy stuff. And I know I'm talking about tools supposedly that you don't know. Let me ask, how many of you have never used Robocopy? Tell me the truth. Yeah, like five people. Okay. So I knew you knew it, but I wanted to review it just very briefly because I think Robocopy does some cool stuff, and I warned you about that in the summary, so don't tell me you already knew, okay? And then from there, I want to talk about wiping disks. It's something that we need to do on a regular basis. There's some great tools out there, some nice tools. I'll even show you a tool that will wipe a disk in under 30 seconds. There's a trick, but it'll do. We'll talk a bit about wrangling licensing with SLMGR. Ever since we've had to do this activation stuff in the Vista days, we've had to do things like, I don't know, extend the licensing period or something like that. I want to walk you through those quickly. There are a lot of batch commands, and I'm a huge PowerShell fan. I'm a huge VBScript fan, but there are times that I'm just too bloody lazy to write a script. And there's a great command built into DOS, Jesus, what did I just say? The command interface. There's a great command built into the command prompt interface called for. And I think a lot of people know some of it, but they don't know all of it, so I want to talk to you about that. There is also, how many of you are starting to do automated deployments? If you're not doing it, you really should be. If you haven't been to like Johan and Michael's talks, those are some terrific talks. They may still be talking for all I know. Those guys just talk and talk and talk. Anyway, Part of the question I will get, because I've done a lot of deployment stuff as well, I started writing about it back in 1996, those guys are way smarter, but people will say to me, how do I set power configurations? And there's a power command called PowerCFG, and it's done some great things over the years, so I want to talk about that. We control services. Net start and net stop is a great little set of commands, but it'd be great to do other things from command lines. Why am I obsessed with the command line? I'm obsessed with the command line for a very simple reason. I love the GUI, but I never want to do anything the same way twice. If I've done it once, I want to be able to do it again with less work. And mouse clicks don't go into a batch file. That's the problem. You can't put mouse clicks in a batch file. So I can figure out how to do it from the command line. It becomes very easy to automate it. You'll probably want to answer that. And so, what was I saying? And so, if we can automate this stuff, then life gets easier. And that's why I'm looking for command line-y kind of stuff. And this is all built into Windows. Partition magic. Anybody remember partition magic? It's a great tool, right? So the Symantec guys bought it so that they could put it out of business. How is that legal? How is that legal? These guys bought Ghost and Drive Image and Alteryx. They bought like all the imaging tools. If Microsoft did it, the Justice Department wouldn't sue them. They would drop a tactical nuke on Redmond. How the Symantec guys, anybody here from Symantec? No? Let's talk about them. So, seriously, you have to admit, you have to admire the sheer balls these guys have. It's like the good things, though, are the support call number. If you need to contact them, the phone number is easy to remember. Just 666. And when I need to get to my Symantec, contact people, I just get some chalk and I make a circle I'm kidding. I love the Symantec stuff and these guys. You gotta like the chutzpah. Anyway, partition magic's gone, but there's some cool things that are in disk part that are like partition magic. I find it be useful sometimes to be able to email from a command line. That's a tool out there called Blat that will do it. By the way, there's also a PowerShell command. We'll talk about those as well. I'm not going to do a lot of PowerShell here because this is sort of volume 4. Volume 5 is going to be cool stuff with PowerShell that you don't know but should be using, but I'll wait another year or two until everybody's a PowerShell expert. How many PowerShell experts do we have in the room? A few. Okay. So how many of you have PowerShell on your list of stuff I really need to learn sometime soon? Okay. If only there were a good book about it that explained how to do Active Directory administration with PowerShell, while at the same time sort of teaching you PowerShell while you weren't paying attention. Wouldn't that be great? I'll have it written in 6 months. So from there, we can do automatic event log scheduling with WEVT util. That's some pretty good stuff. I like to exercise my AD and see that my AD is working right. Watching your tickets in Kerberos, that's important stuff. And we'll see that with K-List. And then finally, anybody here ever use Steady State? Nice thing Microsoft used to give out. For those of you who are running schools, laboratories, libraries, whatever, big bunches of public machines where the public comes in, screws your computer up, students come in, screw your computer up, and you have to reset what they did. It was a great thing Microsoft did. For whatever reason, they stopped giving it away. I realized, though, that with Windows 7, if I glued together like 11 technologies, I could reproduce steady state. So I give it away. It's called steadierstate.com, and I'll talk to you a little bit about it. I'm not making money on it. It's just it's out there. I want you to know about it. So this is a destination check. Is this all right? Okay, good. Yeah. No, but honestly, if anybody says, nah, that's too light, something like that, if you want to go to something else, I'd be sorry to see you go. Seriously, but I want you to have the best show they can possibly have, because this has been a great tech ed. These last two tech eds just make my ears bleed. There's so much new stuff. So with that in mind, let's talk about Robocopy. What's Robocopy's job? I love Robocopy because, have you ever tried to copy a big whack of data from one server to another? Isn't that fun? Because you go and grab it, and Explorer has the little files going like this. And you're thinking, and then it says, this will take 57 minutes. Now, I don't know if those are metric minutes, or what it is, but it doesn't always exactly match reality. And you think, 57 minutes, that's enough time to go get dinner. And you go out to dinner, and you come back, and the little flex, and there's something it doesn't like, because Explorer doesn't really copy files. It just promises to copy them, and then screws you, okay? So, it's Explorer, it's not day laborer, James Kirk finds the planets. He's the explorer. You know, the guy who exploits them, it's a different person altogether. RoboCopy, somebody wrote, it's one of these internal things at Microsoft, and I forget the man's name, but he is a god. And he just, he can't, he's like Racinovich with the sysinternals tools. He just can't stop screwing with them. You know, because every time you turn around, right, every 6 months, sysinternal tools get better. RoboCopy is the same thing. It is now in the box, okay? By the way, it's also great because I do a lot of deployment stuff, I told you, and you, I hope, do it as well. WinPE, if you've got to move data around, it's nice to have, and RoboCopy's inside WinPE at this point. So, here's some basic. Basic copying, this is a basic command, looks like RoboCopy, C colon back, this is like a source, and that's a destination. And that's an easy enough thing to show you. And I've got a folder called folder one, so if I say RoboCop, Robo. Well. I kind of figured by the time I was 54 I'd be retired, but it hasn't worked out yet. So, having said that, I wouldn't get to talk to you nice people. Folder one, folder two. People think that RoboCopy is confusing because you expect the syntax to look like XCopy or copy, and it isn't. It's just a little bit different, but it's pretty easy. The basic syntax looks like that. It's source folder, destination folder. And what I like also is the output. It's not simple little output. It's stuff that makes you say, wow, something happened here. You know, it's just so sexy. And I don't get out much, I told you. So if you're with single for a year and a half, what can I say? And then if I do it again, we've already copied those files over. And what the great thing about RoboCopy is that it's really polite. I mean, basically what RoboCopy is saying to me is, listen, Mark, dummy, you're trying to copy some files that already exist. It basically just ignored me. But the only way I know is it says skipped. Something very professional about that. Very buttoned down, you know? I like that. But what if I wanted to do that? Well, believe me, there's always an option. With RoboCopy, there's always a way. /IS. I don't know what that stands for. It means include stuff. So. And there it is, see? Look at the difference between those outputs. Only difference is like skipped, not skipped. Very cool. I love this application. There are so many things you can do with this. Seriously, if I had to find an application to marry, this is the one that I would marry. It's reliable. It's faithful. It's full-featured. It never says, you want to do that? You know, so there's an option for everything. As I'm thinking about, you know what? This is Holland. I could probably do that here. Don't applaud that kind of stuff. Because you know there are like three people here that are offended by that. And I'm sorry to those people. I'll try not to do it again. So if you want to get specific, you can have a pattern there. If you want to, this will only copy the top level. And very much like XCopy, has anybody run help on XCopy? Ever since Vista, if you say XCopy /?, it says XCopy has been deprecated. Deprecated is software ease for it's still here, but don't bank on it. Could be gone any day. Might be you roll out Service Pack 2 and no more XCopy. That's like when Vista first came out. I was trying to do something sneaky with Windows integrity levels. And I thought, oh, I'll use cackles. Remember cackles, the change access control levels? I typed cackles, /?, and it says cackles has been deprecated. Now use what? Use iCackles. I'm like, iCackles? What is that, like the Apple version? There we go. So, oh, by the way, this color means that's an exact line that works. This is like syntaxy stuff. So here's this case where I'm going to say, I'm going to copy from that file to that file. And then here I want to say, there's lots of levels to the folders, but I only want to go down two levels. So /S does subdirectory, /E does it with whether they're empty or not. The great thing about RoboCopy is, look, we're not going to use RoboCopy to copy two files from one folder to another. You could, but you're not going to. What's RoboCopy for? You got that big-ass job that's got to run at 2 in the morning every night, big whacks of data from server 1 to server 2, right? And it's 2 a.m. How many of you want to be in the data center at 2 a.m. to make sure it's working? Come on, anybody? No? It's so boring being home with those spouse and kids. I'll just, you know, I'll check the block transfer in the middle of the evening. So these are the bomb. These are the switches that made me learn RoboCopy. Slash Zed, I love this. Slash Zed says, you know, I realize sometimes the network's not reliable. So if there's a failure, don't give up. Try it again in 30 seconds and try it, I'm not kidding, a million times. That's the default, a million times. This is the other reason that I love the guy who wrote this. He's crazy. He crazy. Crazy in a good way, you know? It's like, not like tinfoil hat crazy, but he crazy. Then you can change those numbers if you want. Say slash R colon N, you can say what that number is. Here's the other one. This is maybe my second favorite. Slash B. Now you know, because you know this always happens, you go to grab some big whack of folders and there's profiles on the damn thing. And the profiles have the permissions such that you can't actually read those files. No problem. Slash B says use the backup right. Use the backup privilege. So you say slash ZB, gives you both of them. This means it doesn't matter. It will work at this until the end of time. It will get to these files no matter what. So that's pretty cool. There are lots of Windows tools out there, a number of Windows tools, that will let you take a folder from one location and a folder from another and make them identical. DFS, for example, does this. And DFS does this with, it originally did it with a thing called FRS, the File Replication Service. Has anybody set up DFS? Okay, so have you lived the pain of FRS, the File Replication Service? The File Replication Service is okay. It's okay, you know, I mean, it's better than what we had in NT4. And the thing about FRS, though, is that FRS breaks down for difficult-to-understand reasons and fixing it. Has anybody had to ever fix FRS or a sysfile replication problem? That's why the first thing you do when you go to Server 2008, or later, is you use DFSR-MIG, and you move everything over from FRS to DFSR. If you don't know about that, look that up. It's very, very, very... I've written a few articles on it, but you'll find lots of references on that. So FRS was built... I don't know. I imagine that FRS... It's good, but I mean, I think it was built on a weekend with tequila. And so RoboCopy, in contrast, has a mirror option that will do that. You can point it from one folder to another, and it will keep them in sync. And it really does keep them in sync in the sense that if I'm the source folder and you've deleted something, I'll delete it out of the other side, too. So that's some pretty cool stuff. Many times we don't know what RoboCopy's doing because it's a little tight-lipped. And that's why you can get logging. And so I'm a big fan of the logging. And if this looks like too much work, shame on you. Command line stuff's good for you. But TechNet Magazine published a GUI front end for it if you're one of those kind of people. All right? So once you've got something working the way you like, you can save that in a job. Save it in a little file called My Job. It's a little text file. And then from there, you can just do RoboCopy again. And once you've got it working, that means you've got short syntax. Make sense? And I think it's the last RoboCopy thing I'm going to show you. I use RoboCopy in steadier state, because in steadier state, I've got to deploy big whacks of data. And one of the newer, I want to say, 2008 updates to RoboCopy lets you run multiple copying threads at the same time. Did anybody here go to any of the storage talks about the cool new stuff with Server 2012? If you did, then you know one of the things that you heard if you listen to Jose talk or Bob Combs or one of those guys, then they were saying that one of the neat things about SMB multi-link is that you could have one server and another server and a big fast 10 gigabit NIC, but you're still only using maybe 25% of the CPU, which may be fine. Wouldn't it be nice to just flip a switch and say, let's use the whole CPU? Well, now, SMB multi-link will do that, but you've got to set that up, and you need Server 2012. You can do it right now with slash MT. Slash MT lets you set up multiple threads. MT, multiple threads. And here I'm saying, let's get 16 threads running at the same time. And so there you're going to get more CPU utilization. Lots of cool things are coming. That you will then become a RoboCopy fan. Does that make sense? I'm going to ask you if there's a question, but if you have a RoboCopy option that I haven't covered, please don't tell me now, because I know everybody's got a RoboCopy, everybody's got their favorite RoboCopy thing. Email it to me, I'll edit this. So questions, are we okay so far? Yes, sir, please. The last time you checked, RoboCopy doesn't reset the archive attribute. You know, I want to say that I tested that like 4 years ago and it worked, but honestly, it's the last time I looked at it. So, I mean, I'm going to, you know, plead stupid. So, but drop me an email. I'll check it for you. Okay? So, all right. I know that when it comes to all the bits, the file bits, there's about 75 options on it. So it may just be that you didn't find the magic option. Hang on. I do know it works because I had to do that for steadier state. So it's just one of those options. Okay? Other questions? Let's move along. Next thing I want to talk to you about is wiping disks. So what do you do with old computers? Do you just have them in a pile somewhere? Do you sell them to people? Toss them away, recycle them? Of course, selling them on eBay is a good way to make some money, but there's the problem of the hard disks. We've all heard a story about somebody leaving stuff on a hard disk, selling it on eBay, and now internal company memos are showing up on Facebook, you know, or in WikiLeaks, whatever. So what do you do? How do you guys deal with wiping your hard drives? Anybody? How many of you run a program where you write zeros like five or six times? You can do that. It works great. It takes a lot of time, and you need the program, right? If we have special hardware, that's fun. Degaussing device? You know what's even better? I was at a U.S. Army base once, and I'm talking about something like this. And I said, so what do you guys do with your old hard drives? And they said, we grind them up. I said, you what? So we grind them up. I said, you grind them up? Yeah. I said, how do you do this? He says, we got a device. Want to see them? Like, do I want to see? So you got this, like, you know, old 5 1/4 inch ST506 drive. They drop this sucker in this box, and it makes this noise like all of Satan's imps are all grinding, you know, files. And this brown sparkly powder and this green sparkly powder and this other stuff, and you know this is all toxic. I mean, this is like one breath and it's, you know, and you clap for that. What was that? He's dead? Well, you clap. I feel bad. Oh, I think I broke the clip. I'm sorry, AV guys. I'm hell on these things. I apologize. Anyway, so there's a number of tools out there. The first way to do this is, oh, the other one I liked. Okay, so I'm doing some work at a large city, but it's in the southern part of the United States. And if you've ever seen those jokes, you know, you might be a redneck if, well, so it's some. I think of that in terms of techies. I want to do a series like that, the techies. Like, if you can remember 7 passwords, but not your anniversary, you might be a techie. You know, so anyway. If you're using BitLocker, anybody here using BitLocker? It's pretty cool. Because you already spent a lot of time encrypting your drive, it can only be decrypted with the keys. This command, manage BDE, force recovery, /, that says go out to that volume and wipe the keys out of the TPM chip and wipe them out of all other places. That means in a moment, you've already encrypted the drive, and it's pretty gosh darn good encryption, at least for 2012. And so, you know, it's getting to be the end of the year, right? When we're getting into that part of the year, we're halfway through 2012. Is anybody worried about the end of the year, about the end of the world? Any of you? Well, I did some research on it, and it turns out it's the end of the year by the Mayan calendar, which means it will indeed be the end of the world for the Mayans. There's not many of them left, but they're good guys. We'll miss them, but that's it. So you're safe. You know? If there's any Mayans in the room, I'm sorry, man. It's not my fault. I'm just, I don't write this stuff. I just report it. So there's also, if you need one of those programs that will write zeros so many times, Format got this recently. This appeared in either Windows 7 or Vista Format. Nobody seems to know it. So you say Format /P:3, and that will do the 3 passes of writing zeros and writing ones. And if your military has a different specification for that, I apologize. I'm just telling you, it's free. And ever since XP, you've been able to do this, is you format a drive, and then from another drive, you say cipher /W:E:\, and it'll run for a while, and it basically does one of these, you know, write things. So there's some things that will wipe disks for you. Okay on that? Questions? Anybody? No. Okay. I hate activation, but we all hate activation, but it's the stuff that we have to know about. And I know that when I'm building, there's been a lot of times that somebody's had some kind of problem where they can't get something done with their Windows. And it boils down to licensing stuff. And honestly, I have been spending years, when people ask me a licensing question, I just say, I'm not a lawyer, so I can't help you. But there's some technical aspects to licensing. Did anybody go to the What's New in Active Directory talk that my friend Ulf did? Okay. For those of you who don't know, here's a cool thing about 2012. You put in 2012 domain controllers, and when you join your Windows 8 or R2 boxes to the domain, it activates. You don't need a KMS server anymore. Isn't that cool? I think it's great. Anyway, I guess I don't get out much. So, what? If you want to find out more about your licenses, I start off by saying Cscript, whack, whack, H colon, Cscript. And then if we say something like SLMGR-XPR, that will show you how many days or how many hours, how many minutes, how many milliseconds are left until you have to activate this copy of Windows. That's kind of useful. ReArm is good. I'm always building test machines. I'm not going to buy a license for a test machine. I don't have to. The license says I don't have to do it. But the activation stuff says, well, we need to be activated. And so Windows will run, a Windows desktop will run 30 days without activation. A Windows Server will run 60 days without activation. What if I need just a little more time? If I sell SLMGR-ReArm, that will give me another grace period. So a Windows desktop will get another 30 days, a Windows Server will get another 60 days. You can do this twice, so you're allowed to have like three ReArms altogether, four. No, you start out with one, you can do three more, something like that. It changes with every version of Windows. So when you say SLMGR-ReArm, if it says ain't got no more, then there's nothing much to be done about that. If we say DLI and DLV, DLI and DLV will give you information. Here's why I find that useful. I've been a hero with this, and let me tell you how to be a hero. So someone will say to you, we're doing a deployment scenario. We are trying to deploy this image, but it won't deploy. The MDT doesn't like it or whatever. Go over there and do an SLManager-DLV, and it will tell you. This is a retail copy. This is a enterprise copy, a volume license copy, or it's an OEM copy. It's the same case in every case. Someone has taken the build that they got off of their Dell servers and decided, we like this. And they're going to sysprep it and deploy it everywhere. You can't do that because it is an OEM copy. So I'm not saying it's a good thing, but I'm saying this is the easiest and quickest way I know how to do that. If you put a product key in, it's easy to put product keys, and you can put them in the GUI. I haven't seen how to take them out. So you can do it from the command line. IPK will insert a new product key. If you're doing something like Server Core, where Server Core doesn't have a control panel, and so as a result, you can't say, I want to activate at this point. You say SLMGR-ATO. And once in a great while, have you ever had a situation where a machine can't find a KMS server, where it can't activate? So what's happening here is that the way that a Windows 7 or an R2 or a Vista or a 2008 box find a KMS server is by going through DNS. Here's the problem with that. If you have the enterprise license, how does enterprise licensing work? Well, the thing is that when you get your enterprise license, then you get some MAKs, multiple activation keys, and you can put those on as if it were a home copy of Windows. For the other ones, you use the volume license key, and you stuff that onto one of these KMS servers, key management server, and everything should work automatically. Let's say you buy 1,000 licenses, though. How many of you have set up a KMS server? How many of you are in charge of the KMS server? Okay. Does it really count how many times it activates? It doesn't really count. It remembers like the last 25, but it couldn't give a hoot. Seriously. How did I find this out, I hear you cry? Well, I'm teaching a Vista class, early, early, early Vista, at this big university. And I've set up Enterprise Vista. It looks exactly the same as Ultimate, but I thought I'd set it up because they're an enterprise. They gave me an Ethernet connection. I fired up this virtual machine with Vista Enterprise, and I'm showing them some stuff, and all of a sudden a box comes up that says, thank you for activating your copy of Vista. I'm like, oh crap, I just burned one of their licenses. Oops, you know. So we spent some time on the phone with the Microsoft guys at lunch, and they said, don't worry about it, it doesn't matter. Because I always kind of figured the KMS server was reporting back to the mothership on a regular basis. Okay. It doesn't. I'm not suggesting you violate your licenses. Let's be very clear on that. Mark, don't tweet that. Mark did not say that you can get it. But here's the problem. So I thought to myself, wait a minute. So if it doesn't actually burn anybody's license, and I visit a lot of people do consulting and classes, all I need to do is just get a copy of Enterprise and just make sure that I see one client every 6 months. Just, you know, can I just plug in? Oh, no problem. Thank you very much. You know, sorry. I would never do that. I'd be using my power for evil and not for good. And so, which is why Microsoft says, don't put a volume license server on the internet. Now, if you are a university, that can cause you some problems, because I don't know how things work here, but some of the bigger universities in the U.S. have been doing internet so long that they've got a couple of B networks, and they have to deal with academic freedom. So everybody has a static, routable address on all machines, and they're not allowed to have firewalls. They're not allowed to have firewalls because of academic freedom, because in the United States, it is the right and the privilege of every college sophomore to run a porn site off his XP box in his room. So the problem, some of the worst places in the world to run a network are research organizations and universities. You know why? Because all of your customers are PhDs. They're a lot smarter than you. Just ask them. I could just run that network if I had time, but I'm busy running the chemistry department. So. Anyway, so what are they going to do with their KMS servers? What they do is they set up a server that can't be seen from the internet, but then it's not discoverable. In this case, you say SLMGR-SKMS, and then the name of the KMS server, and you can even change the port. So. All right? So that's some licensing stuff. We all good on that? Questions? Don't ask me hard licensing questions, because I'm going to say, I don't know. No? We're good. Let's keep moving. I like command line tools. I told you that. And services, there's a command line tool we've had for ages. Netstart and Netstop. Anybody remember Server Manager? You know, having to stop a service, wait, start it back up. There's very little that actually validates the fact that I've lived on this planet for any time at all. If I get hit by a beer truck tomorrow, it's not clear that anyone will know. And so, there's one story I can tell you that will indicate that I may have been here, okay? This is like in 1998. Windows 2000's taken forever to get shipped. It's NT5 at the time. And I'm interviewing Lou Perizzoli. He's one of the guys on the original team. And Lou knows me, and he says, Mark, sit down. I know the answer to your first question. I said, all right, Lou, what's my first question? He says, when's NT5 going to ship? Windows 2000. I said, I'll bite, Lou. When's NT5 going to ship? He says, late. So, Lou's a good guy. On the way out, I said, Lou, I love what you guys are doing, but could I make a little request? And I'm sure he hears it all the time. She's like, yeah, like what? And I said, well, don't take this wrong, but do you actually use Windows NT? He's like, yeah, it's my workstation. I said, server. Remember in the old days we had servers our workstation? And he says, I said, do you ever have to restart a service? Like, you know, you stop it in Server Manager and you wait for it and you got to start it up again. He says, yeah. I said, if I just had a command that would, like, stop it and start it again. He says, you mean like toggle? I said, no, like restart. He says, well, think about it. The only evidence that I was ever on this planet is these restarted services. But, so, yeah, I didn't write the code. I just begged. I just begged. So, Netstart, Netstop's good. But one of the things I need to do from the command prompt a lot is change, often enough, is make a service auto start or boot start or whatever. You can do that from the GUI, but how do you do it from the command prompt? Well, there's a kind of Swiss Army knife application, SC, for service control. It just does everything. They put it in the operating system with Vista. It's one of those resource kit tools that got put in the operating system with Vista. And it looks like it does many things, and I've written a number of articles on it. But let me just show you one thing. It lets you start. Let you change its start configuration. So SC config, name of a service, then start equals, and there's going to be a value like auto or auto delayed or something along those lines. Let me show you that command. So there's a couple things that are interesting about it. So if I say like SC config Landman server. What's Landman server? That's the internal name of the file server service. That's how old it is. It's Landman server. And we say auto equals, let's say, sorry, not auto, start equals auto. All right, now what's going on here? So a few things. I'm grabbing the server and I'm grabbing it by its internal name, and you know its Indian name, and you know rather than its external name, display name. That's Landman server. And then I'm going to say I want the start to be auto. Has anybody played with SC? How many of you have played with SC? Okay. What's the weird thing about it? Great program, but the guy who wrote it failed parser school. Because For those who don't know, you have to say start equals space. Apparently you have to tease SC. Start equals, wait for it, auto. Okay. I think I got the syntax right. And actually I'm worried because let me let you in on a little clue. Every tech ed speaker is frightened of Tech Ed Europe. Because you guys are the worst, not the worst, but the toughest crowd in the whole Tech Ed universe. Because you all want demos. And if they mess up, you're brutal. You're merciless. So I just kind of want to show you how well I can type. And there's really no need for me to finish with the enter there. Let's go back to the presentation. All right. Now, what I love about this command is that it's so friggin' happy. Success! You know? It's not just success, it's all caps. Very helpful tool. Very helpful tool. Four. Four lets us take any Windows tool that's a kind of onesie-twosie tool, does one thing at a time, and adds looping. It adds power. It adds the ability to do things over and over again. This is the tool that makes any tool into a power tool. The four command lets you do a lot of stuff. I'll give you an example. Have you ever had an application, command line tool, that doesn't take wildcards? If you were at my UAC talks that I did in the past, then you know that I have a tool that will let you change the Windows integrity levels. It's called CHML. CHML, you can say CHML and a file name. You can't use asterisks because I'm a terrible programmer and I haven't figured out how to make that work yet. And I just don't have a lot of time. So that won't work. You could name one file. What 4 does for me, and so follow me on this. This is a little weird, little ugly, but 4 percent A. Percent A is going to be a variable. Percent A is going to be a place where you can put placeholders. In, then you have a pattern. One by one, this will find all the files. One by one, this will get all the files whose names start with B. And one by one, it'll take those files, and where that is, it'll stuff it here. So if the first file that comes out is banana.txt, it will execute chml banana.txt. That's great. Because there are so many terrific command line tools that just really don't seem to understand wildcards or things like that. Make sense? Take it a step further. What if we want to take a command and do it lots of times? For example, what if I wanted to create 500 users? And I want to call them user 1 through user 500. Why would I want to do this? In Windows 2000 and in 2003, there was an Easter egg you may know about. This looks like it's kind of fallen down. There was an Easter egg you might know about. In 2003, a single individual had the head, and groups would have two heads. And they were like, you know, black perspective silhouette. But if you put more than 500 users into a group, the hair would turn gray. Swear to God, it's true. First time I heard this, I'm like, I so have to try that. And I'm like, let's do 500 users. Click, 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 click. No. Finger hurt. So I know that this command will create a user. Net user, user 001. That's going to be that person's password, and then slash add. So that's going to create a new user account. That's if you're on a domain controller. How to create a whole bunch of them. Looks like 4 slash L. And there's our variable again, percent I. But it's going to range in value from 1 to 500. So that's start at 1. Count by 1, get to 500. So how many times are we going to do this? We're going to do it 500 times. Percent I is going to get values from 1 to 500. And there's my command again. Do, in parentheses, net user, user percent I. So that's not going to be user percent I. The first time it's going to be what? User 1. Second time it's going to be user 2 and user 3 and so on. Make sense? Is everybody with me? This is one of the ugliest things we're going to do. So if this is not clear, tell me. So we end up with 500 users now that have the same password. If you saw my Kerberos talk, I wanted to put somebody in 1,200 groups so I could demonstrate token bloat. So I created the Bloatmaster 5000. It's a one-line command, creates 1,200 groups, and it puts a guy in there. At that point, their token's too big, and Kerberos stops working. There was an academic, scientific reason why we had to have this. So let's take a step. So again, 4/L, that's the one that counts. All right? The slash L, it's L as in count. It's going to count from 1 to 500. No, it's L as in loop. Loop, I guess, right? So, all right, good. Here's a big one. Slash F lets us go over files. So I'll tell you this story. I had just gone on a photo shoot. I do wildlife photography for fun. And I had like 1,000 pictures. I was in this photo hide. And I had these fantastic pictures of this water bird nearby. But I mean, they weren't all fantastic. And I just wanted to sort of like find the 5 good ones and toss the rest of them away. And so I'm just kind of sitting there during a really boring meeting, and I'm looking at them one at a time, and I opened up a copy of Notepad, and I typed the names of the good ones, as I saw them, and the other one of the great ones, so I had like good.txt and great.txt. So imagine this, I have a folder with 5 zillion pictures, and I just want to copy the ones that are in good.txt and great.txt. So I created 2 text files with just the names. It would be cool if I could feed this to a for loop. I mean, because I could certainly write a script to do it, but that's no fun. Turns out 4 could do the job. 4/F because of files. What 4 is going to do is it's going to look at the files, good.txt and great.txt. So does everybody see what this is doing? Ask me a question if not. So we're saying for all the file names in this file, everybody in good.txt, and then when you're done with good.txt, add great.txt, do copy, /new pics, this is where the pictures came from, %i, there's the link again, /keepers. Make sense? That's pretty powerful. It's pretty powerful, and I don't think you could do it with the GUI any faster. Because if you did it with a GUI, you'd have to be multi-selecting stuff, and you're looking at pictures in between, so you'd lose track of the focus, it would be a mess. So 4, pretty powerful command. Questions on that? You guys got quiet. Was that? No? All right. Good. Around XP Service Pack 2, a new command, powerconfig, came out. And powerconfig has been changing a lot with every version of Windows. For example, what I liked about powerconfig was that XP has always driven me crazy. Because if I have an XP laptop and I disconnect the power, it dims the screen. I didn't ask for that. And so I want to say to XP, look, stop thinking you know what I want. I know what I want. Don't dim the gosh darn screen. And there was no way to do it from the GUI. There is now, as of Vista. PowerConfig was the only way to do it. What have we got PowerConfig now? If we're trying to deploy power configurations, then it will let us do that. It will let us analyze some cool stuff, like why your computer goes to sleep when it shouldn't, or why your computer can't go to sleep. Anybody ever had a laptop that has sleep-related disorders? Okay? Yeah. This will diagnose it for you. So let's take a look. So the easiest thing, this is for the deploy folks. You could say powerconfig-list, and it will show you all of your power schemes, that's their names, but Windows doesn't want to know the names, it wants to know the GUIDs. So it'll get you that information, and then you can do a powerconfig command to turn that power configuration on, and life is good. Questions on that, anybody? Okay. Another one. Is there a question in the back? Please, speak loudly, please. How do you configure closing the lid action with PowerConfig? I don't remember. I don't know offhand. I've not tried that. Is that something you can't do? Okay. The way that I would try, and I don't know if it would work, is that I would create a custom. I would get a system the way I liked it, and I would say save that as a scheme, and see if I deploy it whether that does the job or not. If it doesn't, then that just means that they screwed up in how they set up the profile. That would be sad. They screwed up? Oh, well. Windows 8 is coming. I've heard it's really good. So that's a, really. Soon you'll have Windows 8 and like every glass surface in your house will have finger marks on it because your kids will be like. Every television's like, how do I get to play Angry Birds? Now, maybe it's just because I'm a control freak, but I didn't like the fact that Vista didn't let me control how long it was before my computer went to sleep, or whether it hibernated or not. And that's because it has this thing called hybrid sleep. And I'm sure what the Microsoft guys did is probably the right thing if someone would explain it to me, but it doesn't make any sense to me. Well, I mean, it does make sense, but I'm a control freak. I want to control, squeeze my last little bit of power out of my laptop. You can restore that, because again, if we go to this setting and control panel, we get sleep after, allow wake timers. What I'm looking for is this, sleep after, allow hybrid sleep, hibernate after, allow wake timers. That's what I want. To get that back, you type powerconfig-h space on, and you'll get that control back. Here's the one I really like. A few tech eds ago, I had a Lenovo T61P, and I had put Vista, I think, on it. So I'm at Tech Ed, no, MVP Summit, something like that, one of those places. So Marcus Murray, another speaker, we were hanging out, and we had to, like, run to get the bus. So I put my laptop to sleep. We ran to the bus. And it was like 20, 25 minutes to get back to wherever the hotels were. And I grabbed my laptop bag, and it's hot. I've been talking to Marcus, you know, and he's hot. You know, so, and so I open it up, and my laptop decided to wake up again. It was listening to the conversation. You know, we're funny guys, and so this is what happens when you give them microphones. They get ideas of their own. And I'm like, oh, my God, this thing is, like, just about burning. I thought, please, please don't tell me I melted this thing. And it was fine. But I'm like, why did you do that? Put you to sleep, young man. I want you to stay asleep. The adults were out. And so I couldn't find out in Vista. With Windows 7, though, all I have to do is just say powerconfig-lastwake. Isn't that cool? You know, you put a machine to sleep, and it wakes up in 20 minutes. It turns out to be some timer or some driver or something like that. And this is fantastic. It really is. It always turns out to be a crappy driver, some crappy third-party driver that for some reason has got to wake your system up every number of milliseconds or whatever. And there's a nice little thing they put in there, powerconfig-energy, that will generate a little report for you about how you can use less energy. A couple things that are nice. If you've done any Hyper-V stuff, you know that you can resize VHDs. You couldn't do that from the command line. You couldn't do it really well with virtual PC or stuff like that. And, of course, in Windows 7 and in Server 2008 R2, we got lots of new things we can do with VHDs. It'd be nice to be able to resize them, maybe to make them larger or something along those lines. That was possible with Hyper-V, but, you know, if you don't have Hyper-V on your system, it'd be a pain in the neck. So DiskPart has the way to do this. And I'll show you a couple of examples real quick. So assume we got a VHD named test.vhd. It's got to be expandable. The fixed size guys can't be, they can't be compacted. But if you want to compact a dynamic VHD, you say compact vdisk. So it looks like this. I'll say disk part, select vdisk, file equals /test.vhd, compact.vdisk. So this takes, because the problem with dynamic disks is they get big and then there's no way to make them get small again. Now there is. Used to be able to do it from Hyper-V, but it was a pain in the neck. It was a lot of clicks. You can also make them larger. So if you say, I did this to be larger. Again, you can do it from the Hyper-V console, but if you're not doing it Hyper-V, if you're using a VHD for another reason, and I use VHDs for a number of reasons, then I say disk part, select disk, select VDisk, files equals whatever, expand VDisk, maximum equals, and that is in megabytes, if I remember correctly. Okay? Along those same lines, we've got essentially partition magic here. This is something we've had ever since Vista. Some of you may know this. I find a tremendous number of people don't know it. That's why I put it in the list of stuff I was going to talk about. So I can say something like, if I say disk part, I can say list volumes, or actually, this part only needs the first three letters. Now, when you're doing command line stuff, you want it to look as confusing as possible because, remember, let me explain why you're doing command line stuff. Did I explain this? I don't think I did. There's a conference that runs in the States a few times a year called Tech Mentor, and I speak at it. They do a magazine. I don't write for that magazine, but you know, they're lovely people, but you know, I don't write for that magazine. It's called Redmond Magazine. And they do a salary survey where you can see, oh, I'm an IT administrator in the Windows world. I'm between this age, and I live in Ohio. You can find out what the average salary is, and you can say, ooh, I'm doing crappy, or I'm doing great. Anybody ever seen one of these? I don't know if they do. I don't think they do it over here. But in any case, what these guys will also do is they'll go out and they'll find the Unix administrators and look at their salaries. And the Unix guys always make like about $10,000. That's like 15 euros more than the Windows guys do. And it's like, why? People say, why? I say, I know the answer why. Because when the boss is walking by you and you're going click, 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 click in control panel, the boss is saying, I could play solitaire. I could so do that. Hell, a minesweeper's harder than that, you know? And so, but how many of you have done Unix administration? I'll bet a lot, just a little bit, right? What do? You don't do Unix with GUIs. Oh, no. Unix, manly administration. Aye. Done from the command line. Back in the days when men were men and sheep were nervous. Aye. So, you know. I don't know why I did a Scottish accent. Most of my ancestors are from Scotland, so I think that's probably why. But anyway, so you do Unix administration in. I love this. I used to call it the command line. What do kids call it? The black screen. It's like, I guess when you watch on TV, hackers work in the black screen, you know? And there's none of that, like, easy command prompt, C:\, whatever. Oh, no. What's command prompt look like in Linux or Unix? It's either like a percent sign or a dollar sign. That's it. It's like, you know what to do, and if not, go away. No games here, mofo, you know? Which is funny, because you'd think if there were an operating system with a dollar sign as a command prompt, it would be Windows. So, you got to figure you're doing this typing stuff, you know, and the other thing too is the Unix guys have it all over us because all of their commands look like line noise, you know, awk, sed, drauf, grep, fgrep, things like this. And I love that. And you know why they did that? They're building Unix in the days of 110 bit per second. I didn't say kilobit. 110 bit per second, 20 milliamp current loops. And so every character counts. You can actually watch the bits going across, you know, the wires in those days. And so you start doing that command line stuff. Like when the boss goes by and sees you do the sed and awk and truff, the boss is like, I could not do that. That guy needs another $10,000. That's all there is to it. Seriously. And my ex-girlfriend, I saw a situation like this. So she was, we got a place on the water, and so her youngest daughter was about to go to college. And so she came to stay with us for the summer. And she needed a laptop because she was going to college. And she didn't have one. So I had one, like an extra laptop. I stuffed a big hard drive on it, put lots of memory on it, put Vista on it. It's good for her. And so it was a few years ago, you know, before we had Windows 7. And so she's sitting there hacking away. And this is so long ago, because that's a big 5 years, big 4 years, that no one was doing Facebook. They were doing MySpace. That's how long, you know, this is. And so one evening, she would just sit there in MySpace to her friends. And I'm like, you do know we have telephones, but there are certain technologies that arrive now and then that make me realize I'm old. So anyway, so one day we have a network crisis. Network crisis is where you can't get on MySpace if you're 18. And so my ex, who's a techie, she like just goes over and did what you did. She just opened up the command prompt, does an IP config, fixes it, everything's fine. And her daughter was a great kid. She was not a snotty teenager at all. But I'd never seen the look of awe on her face. Like, Mom, what did you do? And she's like, what? She says, you were working in the black screen. Like the hackers. Are you a hacker, Mom? The command prompt can also raise your stature in the your friends and family's eyes. So forget list, do Liz. Liz, volume. No, Liz Vol. List volumes. Let's go to drive E there. Let's select volume, select volume, right? 3, I don't want to do that. No, 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 no. Cell, vol, three. Very manly. I feel the testosterone coursing through my brains. And now I can say, could I shrink this? And I can say, well, how much can I shrink? If I say shrink query max, it'll think about it for a minute, or maybe more, and it'll tell me how much I can shrink it. So we have that nice partition magic kind of thing that we can do, and I'm not going to wait around for it. I'll come back just to show you it worked. Well, yeah, we'll come back and show you it worked. And so we can say something like, I think I have a, yeah. Here's what I say, shrink, query max tells you how much you can take out. Now, let's be clear. If this is a C drive, never do shrink. And by the way, if you type shrink all by itself, it finds out the maximum shrinkage it can do, and it shrinks all of that, so there's no empty space on the drive at all. Never do that on a C drive, okay? Never do that on a C drive. Just please, that's important. Syntax looks like shrink desired equals megabytes and whatever. So nice little tool. You can also do it from the GUI if you're that kind of person, but there's... You can extend as well, so that'll do the job for you at the same time. Does this make sense so far? Have you ever wanted to email yourself something when something happened? Now, we can do this now with Vista and later, but this is back in the Windows 2000 and XP days. I had set up a server. In my defense, I'm going to say I was busy, really busy, traveling a lot. Paid a lot of money for the hardware, but I got a bum C drive, and it kept destroying little bits of itself. And the event log even told me this. This is a long time ago. I realize it makes me look stupid, but it was 10 years ago. I was younger. I had all my hair, and it was all, you know, had color, you know, and had more brain cells than I should have known this, you know, but I didn't. So what was happening was I was getting an event ID 6 from source disk, which is event log-ish for, hey, you got a bad part of the hard drive, buddy. And there's a whole bunch of them, these little red crosses sitting in my event log. I didn't notice them. And you really only notice them when you reboot, because that's when it needed those areas. And so, like I said, I was fine until Windows Update, whose job is to keep my computer from failing, caused my computer to fail by making me reboot. So I thought, okay, this is, and that meant that's when I lost my web server, which was the beginning of a bad day at the office. And so I said, man, this is never going to happen again. This is really embarrassing. I've got that event ID 6 right there. If that ever happens from XP or for Server 2003, I want an email. So there was a command called event create, where you could say, if this event happens, then do this. Because, you know, in those days, this is like, we're talking like 2000, 2001, smart-ish phones were starting to come out. There were applications that would run on smart-ish phones. And if you'd be at a tech ed conference or something like that, and some guy would talk about how great his smart-ish phone was, and he'd say, I got this application, lets me reboot my servers. Watch, we're sitting in the bar, says, just rebooted my Exchange server. I'm like, you did what? But anyway, I thought, he can do that. That's cool, you know? I wanted my phone to give me that information. So I thought, when this happens, create an event and text me. There's a magic email that will show up for you as an SMS, right? So all I needed was a tool that would let me send email from the command line. That tool is called Blat. Blat is free. It's from blat.org. And that's what a Blat looks like. It says, there's the body text, event ID, whatever happened. That's where the server it goes to. We got our login information and stuff like that. It's got some slightly weird syntax because there is under body that's dash dash. That is supposed to be that way. So it's kind of cool. So you can use Blat, you can put it into batch files, you can schedule events, you could even schedule events before you're going to go out on a dinner, where you can even send events, say, oh, system's crashing, got to leave dinner. And that would be your way to get out of the dinner. So, and Blat would be the key. If you use in PowerShell, the command's going to be send-mail message. You should look into that. I got a column on that coming out pretty soon. I want to know if my AD's working at any moment in time. And so this is there's a million things we could do with AD. I just want to pass along one of my favorite tricks. A tool called RepAdmin. Anybody know RepAdmin? Anybody played? Okay. Who knows everything about RepAdmin? Liar. There's so much stuff there. RepAdmin does wonderful stuff. And there's even only half of the things. When you do RepAdmin/?, you only see half of the things that are possible. There are certain things created just for the Microsoft Product Support Group. Yes, just for those guys. And the way you get to it is you type repadmin/experthelp, all one word, expert help. Warning, this will void your warranty. Okay. One thing I like, though, is I want to find out, but you know, before I'm going to do, like, because pretty soon Server 2012 is coming out. And I can't wait to get my first domain controller for Server 2012 on there. Well, that means I've got to update my schema. That's going to happen, though. Before I do that, I want to make sure that everything's working fine. So the first thing that I do before I start messing with my domain is I make sure the domain's working. I want to basically flush all the pipes, you know. I want to make sure all the connections work. I want all the DCs to talk to all the other DCs. And this is the tool that'll do it for me, repadmin. It looks like repadmin, sync all. Sync all means you, domain controller. Synchronize with all of your friends. Synchronize with all of your friends. Now, there is no one command that will say, domain controllers everywhere, synchronize with everybody else. There's no repadmin/orgy, you know, no replicate with everybody else. But there's repadmin/syncall, looks like this, /e, this is one of those cases where case matters. Little e, big P. Little e means talk to your friends even if they're across a WAN link. Big P means don't ask them, tell them. So normally when we replicate, I say, hey, what's new? You tell me what's new. I want to say, I'm telling you what's new. So P for push. DC1 is the name of the domain controller that's going to do that. And this, it's a little bit stupid because if you're sitting at DC1, you still have to type DC1. That's unfortunate. And then the naming context of what you're trying to change. So in English, if I have a domain called bigfirm.com, I go to a domain controller DC1. I'd say repadmin/syncall/e/p, DC1, DC equals bigfirm, DC equals com. Do this for all of your domain controllers. And what you'll see is a bunch of junk and then the command completed successfully. Sweeter words a person cannot hear. Okay? So repadmin. Talk a bit about the event log. I got a couple things I want to tell you about the event log. Useful tools. As you know, when Vista came around, it changed the way the event log came out. It had a whole new code name, Crimson. There's a command line tool that lets you do stuff from the event log. You're thinking, why would I want to do this? Well, what do you do with your security logs? I mean, we really should take our security logs, and we really should be archiving them somewhere. That means somebody's got to go pull the gosh darn things off and put them somewhere. And that involves third-party tools we don't want to deal with. It's a free one. You just wevtutil. Wevtutil has this command, cl for clear log. It will clear the security log, but then it backs up, bu is backup, out to this location. If you put a command like that in all of your systems and once a week, Tuesday at 3 a.m., you run that, it's a poor man or poor woman's way to archive all your security logs. Make sense? Now, most of the time when you're looking at the event log, I guess you're going to the event viewer. But do you want to do that? What if we could extract just the critical events from the last day? By the way, some of you have System Center. I'm sure you can do this stuff already. I can't afford System Center. I just want a few System Center-y kinds of things that I can cobble together. I told you, I'm cheap. And so if I could just say, go get all of the errors, go get all of the criticals from the last 24 hours and email them to me, this is how I do it. I'd say wevtutil, QE means query events. Here I'm taking it out of the system log. You'd have to do it for more than one log. And that stuff that looks like machine language, that's a query language called XPath. Query language called XPath. But that says, show me, so level 1 and level 2, that's critical and error. How did I know to write that? So it says wevtutil query events from the system log, that's the query. Show me everything that, show me, this is show me everything. 24 hours would be different. Show me everything that is error or critical. /F:text. And the reason it's F:text is that that tells it to output it as human text rather than XML because XML is the default. I don't know about you. That seems fine to me because when I get my data, I always prefer it in XML. Right? So, now how did I get that query string? Very simple. If you go to the Event Viewer GUI and you type a filter of some kind. There's this XML field, XML tab over here. Grab that tab, and what you will see, if I were to blow this up, I just want to blow that up, is that it shows you the XML, grab this little hunk there. Grab that little hunk, and that's how you can build an XPath query very, very easily. Okay? Questions on that? So you take the output from that, you blat it, or you send mail message, and every morning at like 7 a.m., as you're eating breakfast, you find out what happened at the system last night, and you're ready to go, and you didn't have to do any RDPing or anything like that. So. You guys are quiet. That's not exciting? No? All right. Thank you. Thank you. It's that kind of support that keeps me going. This is a much bigger story. It's a much bigger story. But K-List is important, and here's why. You know, there's been a number of log-on tools that we have seen in the Windows world over the years. The two most recent ones are NTLM/NTLM v2 and Kerberos. A lot of you are using NTLM even though you don't realize it. And NTLM's scary because it's pretty long in the tooth. It's pretty old now. Next year, NTLM will be 20 years old. Anything that involves cryptography that's 20 years old, what's that called? That's called something without cryptography. And so NTLM is getting to the point where if you let me sniff traffic that's NTLM encrypted, I'll be able to crack it quick as a wink, very soon. I mean, soon your iPad will be able to, you know, crack it. So you want to get rid of this stuff. And one of the things we do is we want to check to make sure that we're actually getting... And you say, wait a minute, Mark, I have an Active Directory. I log on with Kerberos. Well, probably not. When I do work with large organizations and small organizations, I say, do you mind if I sniff your network? They're like, why? I said, because I want to find out. You got an Active Directory. How many of your logons are NTLM logons rather than Kerberos logons? And they say, none. I say, let me do the sniff. You can analyze it. I find in most large organizations, 5 to 7% of the logons inside the AD are NTLM logons. Misconfiguration, bad programming, or just plain busy domain controllers. That's the reason. You'd like to know that stuff. You want to know whether or not you've actually logged into Kerberos or not. It's very simplified, but one quick way to get a handle on that is a tool called K-List. K-List will list your Kerberos tickets, the ones that you have. If you think you're logged onto your Active Directory and you type K-List and you just get a command prompt back, that means you're logged on with NTLM, not with K-List. It's a nice tool along those lines. Similar to that is Who Am I? This is a tool I've seen implemented in just about every operating system. What's the value of this? Well, ever since UAC appeared, there's always been that question of, do I have the power that I really think I should be having? Who Am I will show you all kinds of stuff about you if you haven't played with it yet. And there's our friend Query Max. It told us the maximum number of reclaimable bytes is 194 gigabytes. And so we could do that if we wanted to, but we're not doing that because I need that disk to stay the way it is. So. And if I run Who Am I? Who Am I shows me, first of all, my SID. It also tells you your username, so if you're struck with amnesia and you're sitting at your computer, you just type Who Am I and you're totally in good shape. Shows you your groups and then your privileges. What's the value of this? You're trying to run some application. It's not working right. And you don't have Mark's tools. I mean, if you've got Racinovich's tools, then you can just right-click any process, and you can see what's in that token. Here you're technically looking at the token that's in the command prompt session, but that's probably going to be the same. So, okay. All right. Almost to the end here. I want to talk to you about one thing. I talked a little bit about steadier state. Remember I told you that those of you that run big hunks of public access computers or just computers run by people who don't give a hoot, basically what I do is I take your computer configuration, the one that you like, and I convert it to a VHD. Then you're going to boot off a VHD. We've been able to do that with Windows 7 and since. What I also do, though, is I take differencing disks. That is, we get your computer the way you want it. And I say, fine, that's image.vhd. Let's create a child image called snapshot and boot off a snapshot. All the changes that you write are not written to image.vhd. They're written to snapshot. When you want to roll back, when you boot up, there's an entry in your boot menu. It says Windows 7, as always. Then it also says rollback changes. Click rollback changes. System automatically reboots. automatically gets rid of the child, creates a new child, and reboots again. It takes about 3 minutes and 37 seconds. Here's the value. You've got a lab of 40 students. They come in at 8 a.m. By 9:15, they have screwed up all your computers. It's their job. Downloading viruses, porn, and other useless stuff. Say to them, okay, you have between 9:15 and 9:30 to get all the computers back pristine. Say to your users, reboot, and when the menu comes up, hit roll back and then walk away. So you've seen how it goes. If you want to make changes, that's simple. There's a guard word that you can type, and that will then allow you to be able to reboot, get a command prompt, and you can merge changes so you can do things to do updates. So it's perfectly free. I'm not trying to make any money off of it. It's just I knew that steady state was that people missed it. And I couldn't come up with a name. I had so many damn names. And then that day before at lunch, I'm talking to a friend, and I said to her, you know, it's like used to be steady state. And I know what this is, like steadier state. And I think she talked to me for the next 10 minutes, but I didn't hear anything. Because I whip up my iPad, and like, oh, that domain is so not taken. Oh, anyway. All right. If I can keep you for just another minute. Log on to the site, the TechNet site. Point at either one of those guys, and that'll take you straight to the evaluation page. We have not had a lot of evaluations. I know you're busy people, but the feedback is so, so, so important. I mean, it's not like I'm going to fire myself, but they might fire me. But seriously, the feedback is just super important because, you know, I like to think I'm a decent speaker, but I get a lot of feedback. I mean, do this for me. If there's something I did you really liked, please make a comment so I keep doing it. And if there's something that I did that you didn't like, go ahead and do that too. I only get to come to Tech Ed because you guys keep asking for me. And I just, you know, I can't tell you how thankful I am because I just so love doing this. Haven't been here a few years, you know. I know. For 2 years. Thank you. Seriously, this is, I told you, you guys are the toughest audience. This is my toughest, you know, test with myself every year, and I hope that I passed your test. Anyway, that's how you get to me. Thank you. Safe trip home. Remember to use this knowledge for good and not for evil. See you next year. Bye-bye. Thank you.